Hello and welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. Today, I'm excited to have Guy Dazin here with me. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us about what you do?
Yeah, thank you so much. My name is Guy Dazin. Thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm an artist, a writer, an educator. I have a teaching degree, a certificate in art history and English. And I teach in the preparatory school for English at Bar-Ilan University. I also have my own podcast. I'm also an artist, and I like to paint portraits, draw portraits, different depictions and imageries. So I like to play around with different visuals. And that's it, basically.
Okay, so you say that you're an educator. Is that also to do with art and your portraits that you're creating?
Yeah, I am not teaching painting and drawing and stuff like that, but I do commission different portraits that people order, and I do them. And most of the time, it's people like loved ones or family members that they want to in paint. So I do that, but I would like to teach in the future painting, drawing, different mediums and techniques. So I like it. I like it very much.
Can you tell me about how you got into art and why you decided to start?
Yeah, I was always painting ever since from my formative years. I started painting and drawing and writing comics and stuff like that. Influences from Southeast Asia, like Korea and Japan. So I like that culture. I like painting. And I loved the comic books and pop culture. And I was drawn by it via the English language that allowed me to gain access into that world, the wider world of art in general. I loved writing. So I would write a lot of poems and short stories. And I like to tell different stories and to that go on a journey that have some kind of impact on the world. So I was always drawn to artistic, the depictions, the visuals, the painting. I love to watch a lot of anime and cartoons, American cartoons, like Cartoon Network, for example. So I was drawn to a lot of this undercurrent of mainstream pop culture, but also some of the more subversive underground art scene. So I was always drawn to stuff like Berserk, and that was very wacky and weird. It had so many great panels in that manga. Specifically, I never watched the anime, but I just liked a lot of it. I like traditional painting and artists, Monet, Van Gogh, Leonardo da Vinci, even people like Alphonse Cuvier, which was a kind of a mainstream artist, but I liked a lot of the different Arabic kind of styles, the art deco of the 1920s and 30s. So I learned in university a lot about my degree was in art history. I was exposed to a lot of the artists and art movements and to a lot of different new mediums that I was drawn to. Quilting, I was fascinated by it, by different patterns and pattern making, by different techniques. So I always liked a lot of it. Very deep, meaningful depictions. It can be historical or fictional or mythological depictions. It doesn't matter which medium, but I just liked it in general.
Yes, no, I see where you're coming from. I want to ask, you did a degree in art history, and I've had friends and family members who've done art degrees that focus more on the art itself and the technicalities of creating art. I just want to know what an art history degree encompasses and if it does dabble into creating art as well.
So there are different routes that you can take when it comes to art history. One is the historical, theoretical side of art, which is very logistics, very technical, different perspectives, different mediums, techniques, tools. There's another route you can take when it comes to art history and art studies in general, which is the more technical side, the practical side, when it comes to painting depictions in different mediums, like sculpting, for example, paper mache, claymations, stop motion, animation and stuff like that. There are a lot of different routes and techniques and mediums. And the third route focuses more on therapeutic art, which is to teach people how to mend, shall we say, their souls by experimenting with different techniques and different mediums. Maybe you can paint with a charcoal on a canvas, or you can take a simple papyrus and take watercolors or acrylic colors and just experiment with different objects and depictions. There's not one codified way or correct way to approach this subject, to broach this subject, and to be a successful artist. Most people steal physical objects. They treasure them. They are different. They are artifacts that are very charged with meaning, and the interpretation can go a lot of different ways. And beauty is in the eye of the beholder. There isn't one correct way to approach it or to be a successful selling artist. So there are a lot of different routes. I finished everything I wanted to say on the subject, but in order to be a successful artist, it's very cliche, but you need to lead a very interesting and diverse living. You need to draw a lot of inspiration from a lot of different sources, and you want to make sure that the well of inspiration does not dry up too quickly. You have to replenish your inspiration daily. You have to be factual. You have to keep up with the times. Doesn't mean that you won't be a successful artist if you're painting traditional depictions from mythology or religion. It doesn't matter which religion or which mythology, but it doesn't mean that you won't be successful, but you have to carve out a different vein for yourself. You need to make your art stand out from the crowd. So that's something that is very difficult to do, and it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of discipline. So that's the tip that I will give someone who is trying to wet their feet in the pool of the art scene, because we are so saturated in the modern era with so much visuals and different imageries and symbolism. So there's a new language that is being formed through different events that occur all around the world, and the depictions and the art that actually typifies or mirrors the modern age and the world, it's the one that tells the story in the most objectively convincing and simplified way. So a great piece of art, in my opinion, can tell an entire story with just a paintbrush or a chisel or a needle point. It doesn't matter which medium, but it can tell the story, or it can become such a potent metaphor for the object that is being depicted. that it becomes a powerful and encapsulates a lot of the feelings and emotions that the people have, the layman or the populace have. If an artwork is to be successful and popular and renowned, it needs to tell a story from a very unique and original angle or perspective. It needs to have all these components in order to be memorable, because you don't want the depiction to be just a one-off. You don't want it to be forgotten just as soon as it arises or presents itself. So the viewer needs to come out with a different, needs to be able to remember that artwork, that depiction needs to be inspired, needs to, so the artwork needs to arise some kind of emotion with the viewer. It cannot be a stagnant image that will forever stay like that. Even if it's the most perfected, the most masterful of depictions and artwork, it will not stand the test of time if it does not arise or stir some type of emotion within the viewer or the consumer or a potential client, for example. So if you want to have different patrons or regular patrons and customers, you have to appeal to your base. You have to know what sample of the populace you are targeting, what is your niche, what is your personal story as an artist, how have you come to be an artist, to become an artist, what is your journey, what were your struggles along the way. So it's a very complicated thing that to describe, because it's very different for a lot of different artists. It changes from person to person, from individual to individual. People have different traits, different qualities, different life experiences. So they need to bear their souls in some way that is meaningful to the viewer, to the consumer, to people in general. People who encounter your artwork by chance, they weren't necessarily, let's say, for example, people who are not necessarily drawn to portraits in ink, because portraits in ink are perceived to be a very traditional, very, very run-of-the-mill, very cliche, nothing too exciting about them. But once you think about how difficult it is, for example, one of the greatest artists to ever live, in my opinion, is Henri Matisse. And Matisse was the master of the line. He could draw a fully fledged portrait realistically following one contiguous line without breaking it. So that is a masterful technique that not a lot of people can reproduce. You have to find your niche as an artist, as a person, as a businessman, because art at the end of the day is also a business, and you have to chart the waters that you're entering into. You have to sample the populace you are pandering to. And finally, you have to do something that you love. You don't want to resent your own artwork. It doesn't matter how skillful, how masterful you are at painting, at carving. You just need to stay on course, be true to yourself. So the self-expression is the tag or the keyword that I would give to a tip for being a successful artist.
So I just want to piggyback off of one of those points you made there. So I believe that something all artists have in common, or something everyone could agree on, is art is this process of filling your bucket up, filling your bucket of inspiration up, pouring it out and then replenishing it. And what I want to know is, how can an artist replenish their bucket of inspiration? I know for me, sometimes it looks like going out for a walk and being close to nature, bringing a note or and a pencil with me, and then just jotting down little notes. But in your case, it might be drawing or sketching. What I want to know, what activities do you do to replenish that bucket of inspiration?
Yeah, that is a great question, a fabulous question. I also draw a lot of inspiration from nature. I draw a lot of inspiration from patterns. The urban kind of perpendicular angles are very inspirational to me because I like the different patterns that are formed from different outcrops of urban buildings and areas. So if you look at an out of a regular kind of building, you see a lot of straight lines. You see a lot of squares, a lot of oblong kind of shapes. You see straight lines and stripe patterns that are engraved on the physical buildings themselves. So whenever there's a kind of a glitch in the system, whenever there's some poorly planned, let's take, for example, a balcony that was situated in a place that it shouldn't be. It's not a part of the plan. It's not a part of the blueprints of the architect. So these kinds of glitches in the matrix are very interesting to me and very inspiring. And I also like to write poems and stories. So I draw a lot of inspiration and I take a lot of metaphors from physical man-made objects like that. So I'll give you one example. I don't know if this is an original metaphor that I came up with, but I would like to think so. So when I was riding the train, there's a lot of gravel on the train tracks. There are different mounds made up of gravel and small stones and stuff like that. When the train car speeds up and I looked out the window and I looked down at the gravel stone and I saw the lines start to mesh together and they form these fine lines, and these fine straight lines, they looked like piano chords. And I thought to myself, this train is going at the speed of Mozart's K350 symphony, for example, or concerto. So I like classical music. I love music in general. So I'm drawing a lot of inspiration from different song lyrics, different symphonies, instrumental kind of parts and songs. Draw inspiration from nature. I draw inspiration from depictions from popular culture, like the punk underground scene, anime, manga, mainstream TV series. So I draw inspiration from a lot of different things. I also draw inspiration from my own kind of a subconscious mind, stuff that just pop out unexplainably, random thoughts that start taking shape and form and turn into different ideas. And these ideas get translated in paint, in poems, in short stories that I like to write. Different things. And sometimes they die out fairly quickly, but other times they balloon and they become fully fledged ideas. And I can take these ideas, this skeletonized ideas, and turn this clay into bronze. Going back to our artistic lingo, you take the clay and you turn it into a bronze. So sorry, not clay, wax. You take the wax figure and you turn it into bronze. So that's what I try to do. I never take any notepads or stuff like that. I never take a sketching book or anything like that. I don't think I can do it in a public space. I like to consume the ideas and I like to pour them out later and actually work on the idea, develop it, build flesh and bones, to build the flesh and muscle on the skeletonized initial formative idea and see where it goes. Because natural progression, I think, is the best way to construct an artwork. You cannot force something to be something it is not. What I mean by that, for example, if you have a character in a book that is described as a very aloof, very solitary, depressed, doesn't like his job or career perspectives, he cannot progress or advance in his company, for example, you won't in the first chapter and the second chapter, you won't have him like win the lottery and find the love of his life and progress and become the CEO of his company. It doesn't work like that because you're only in the first chapter of the book. And it's just an example. It doesn't mean it can't happen in a book, but it's the progression is not logical. So I draw a lot of inspirations, as I've mentioned, from nature, from consuming pop culture. I love reading a lot of difficult philosophical fictional books. I love books like The Lord of the Flies, for example, The Story of the Eye, which is a very difficult book to understand and to read. I like Franz Kafka's stories. I draw a lot of inspiration from these, like James Joyce, Ulysses, for example. So I love these kind of philosophical and fictional stories like Orlando. Orlando is a very good book. Or A Room of One's Own. Or A Life, Emmanuel by George Perec. Yeah, I draw inspiration from a lot of different authors, a lot of different movies. One author that I recently picked up is Stefan, a very awesome writer. Everything he touches, he has the Midas touch of gold. I like Stefan Zweig, I like everything he writes, and I draw a lot of inspiration. Another very popular author, Japanese author called Haruki Murakami. I love his books, I love his weird kind of ideas, I love his characters and protagonists. So I draw inspiration from a lot of different sources, and you need to replenish the inspiration by consuming different things or experiencing new life experience, trying out different things, the things you would never conjure or dream up to actually experience. Maybe you should try to experience them for the first time and see how it pans out. But there are a lot of different methods to draw inspiration. There's, as I've mentioned, consumption. The other thing is experiencing new events or picking up new habits. For example, if you're someone who is very, very docile, maybe you should try to start an exercise, for example. If you're someone who is very active and someone who hits the gym all of the time, maybe you should draw back and try to be a homebody for a period of time and try to pick up different books or try to learn to cook. For example, those are the three kind of the main methods of replenishing and renewing your inspiration and your drive and motivation for creating. There are other ways, but maybe I can elaborate on that. There are other ways, but they are more individualized. So, for example, if you are a person who is very experiencing a lot of listlessness. So you're walking around aimlessly traversing this earth and world without any goal or destination in mind, you should probably find some kind of not specifically religious belief, but you need to find some drive, some motivation, something you need to form or to join some type of community or to try to build a community by yourself, because people, human beings, are tribal creatures. We cannot survive on our own. So these are the four main ways I think one can replenish and keep the ember or kindling, the ember of inspiration, kindling and to rekindle it or replenish the well of inspiration. One must seek out, in my opinion, one of these four methods or ways of living or ways of perception. Yeah.
Yes, I definitely understand your point of how having an objective or an end goal is paramount, as you have to have something that you're working up to give you motivation and have that drive. I want to ask now, if people want to connect with you, where can they find you? Do you have a website or social media channels that they could contact you or say hi?
Yeah, so if you want to contact me, you can do it via, for example, I'm also on LinkedIn, I'm very active. So if you want, I also have an email. I if you want, I'll send you my email link. So if you want to commission any portrait, fine by me. Just keep in mind that I do not draw in a very realistic fashion. I have my own special kind of technique that I developed, and it's very interchangeable. And so the result, you will be reimbursed fully if the result is not satisfactory. The other thing is, if you want to say hi, as I've mentioned before, on Facebook or LinkedIn or my email, if you have any business inquiries or proposition, same thing. Email is the best way to connect for me. And yeah, that's it. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
No, thank you so much. I just want to confirm, are all those social medias at Guy Dazin, G-U-Y, and then space D-A-Z-I-N?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Please do give Guy Dazin some love. And if you like this podcast and want more episodes like this, please do leave a review and share it with a friend or family member. We hope to see you next time and are thankful that you are listening today.
Love it for me. Nothing for me, no, nothing for me, always.